We're back courtside with Campbell Knezovic here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, your home for college basketball coverage in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Elijah Campbell, and as always, Michelle Knezovic, and Michelle with a festive and very fitting attire here, as she has a retro SEC logo sweatshirt on as we are about to preview SEC conference play, which is right around the corner.
I think I gave the camera a good enough look at it.
Oh, it looks fantastic. They're all retro mascots from the SEC, and that is one of those good Goodwill finds that you get where it's like that was worth all of like the $4.50 needed to pay for it. Like that's what you go thrifting for, or retro sweatshirts like that. A+, well done.
Thank you, Elijah. I put it on just for this show. I was like, I saw it hanging. I just washed it and I was like, I have to put it on. But I had been looking for this sweatshirt when I went to Kentucky my senior year. So 2019, I had seen it on an Instagram ad or something. And I remember being like, as soon as I saw it, I clicked on the ad. I was going to get it. Like, no questions asked. I was going
to
get it.
Oh, yeah.
And sold out everywhere. I could not get it anywhere. I was like, what? Why can't, like, I couldn't get it anywhere. And then I visited Lexington over COVID in March. And I just went into a boutique that I loved when I was in school there. And there it was hanging right in the front. And I grabbed it. I said, I'll take this.
Yes. Wow.
But it's awesome. You can see all of the old mascots. I always get so many compliments too when I wear it. People are like, that's so sick. I think because you know me, I'm the fashion one.
Right.
I love the fashion. Vintage sports apparel has become so popular in the high fashion world and just fashion in general.
Right.
I love it. I love cool finds. I love old jerseys. All that Tennessee Oilers stuff.
Oh,
so sick.
Yeah.
We love some vintage sports gear, even though we both know, and everybody who listens to this podcast or Robbie and Rex in the morning knows I absolutely hate Tennessee just because I went to Kentucky.
Naturally.
But I will say, I love the pinstripe.
Oh, the candy cane pants?
Candy cane.
Yeah.
So I can't give them a little love on the fashion side of things.
I mean, even the jerseys they wear now where it's, you know, it's Tennessee curved over the top, number, Volunteers curved underneath the bottom is a little bit of a throwback. Those are kind of what they wore. Now, the font's different. The letter font's different than the 70s Tennessee Vols basketball jerseys. You know, the Bernard King and Ernie Grunfeld teams. Those were, I think, the best. That's the best era of Tennessee basketball jerseys. And what we have now with them is probably the closest they've been, but they've pulled it off a little bit in terms of like mixing like the retro look and then having a little more of the modern look as well.
That's something that gets fans so excited too. Mm-hmm. When you bring back a revised version of a vintage jersey, or even you see the NBA teams all the time do maybe a couple games, like we're going to wear the vintage jerseys. Yeah. You know, my favorite one is like the Supersonics.
TBT. Those are sick. Now, 90s Supersonics, where they're, it's like dark green, red, and that's when they had like the actual like Sonic logo. And then like early 2000s, it was like a lighter green and a yellow.
And they took the red all yellow. Out.
Okay. Yeah. I think I like that one a little better, but it's close. Like both of those. It's hard to choose from both of those. I think both of those are fantastic retro jerseys. And, of course, it helps that like, they're not a team anymore, so it makes it even more retro. But, like, when I was a kid, I definitely watched a lot of the Sonics games in that green and yellow, like the one Kevin Durant wore, like those jerseys, that era, like the last era Seattle Supersonics.
RIP Seattle Supersonics.
A nice moment of silence there for for the artist formerly known as the Seattle basketball team. But we talked about Tennessee's retro jerseys, which Arkansas, speaking of SEC retro jerseys, another good one if you ever get the chance. They've been wearing a lot of those 90s throwbacks where there's like slanted red on it. Like it's really weird. It's hard to describe verbally in this forum. Even like I can't like use my hands to speak to describe these over on the video part of it. Exactly. But they've been wearing a lot of those throwbacks. They're sick. The SEC has a ton of sick throwback jerseys. The SEC is also going to be uber competitive this year. It's a loaded conference from top to bottom. We knew Kentucky was going to be good. We knew Alabama was going to be good. As always, it's basketball. I mean, with the exception of 2 years since the Great Depression, Kentucky has not been good at basketball in terms of at least being a top 25 team or a team that's in the NCAA tournament. So you know Kentucky's going to be good. Tennessee brought in Kennedy Chandler. They were going to be good. They're still an elite defensive team. Arkansas, you figured, would be good because Eric Musselman doesn't recruit. He reloads, especially with transfer talent. Alabama, you knew would be good, the defending regular season and tournament champs last year. They brought a lot back, including J.D. Davison, who is a freshman this year, is one of the best freshmen in the SEC. He's off to an awesome start. And then, of course, like there's LSU, who is number two in our first net rankings that came out, which are one of the more popular, more leaned upon metrics when it comes to seeding and fielding the field of 68 come March. So that's a lot of teams. It's going to be log jammed up at the top as well. Michelle, we'll go ahead and break down, you know, the favorites. When you were looking at these teams before the season and then you saw what they've done so far through about, most of these teams played about 9 to 11 games before we get into conference play, who would you describe as the favorite if you were having a vote as a media member going into conference play based off what you've seen already?
Okay, so people are going to think I'm being biased because I'm going to say Kentucky, mm-hmm. but I'm not just saying it because I went to Kentucky. I mean, you can even look at just their performance so far this year. Yes, they had that first game against Duke, but Duke's also one of the top two teams, top three, top five teams in the country.
We're number one last week.
On any given day, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So I think what we've seen from them so far this season, first off, Oscar Tshiebwe is a freak of nature. Mm-hmm. Who averages 20 rebounds a game? I'm sorry, but who?
I mean, at this level, there's nobody. Yeah, that rebounds like that man can rebound.
Well, like, absolutely incredible. You know, we thought he was going to be good. We saw him at West Virginia. He was a great player, obviously very sought after in the transfer portal, landed at Kentucky. And wow, has he performed mm-hmm. so far this year? Yeah. Absolutely incredible. With a mixture of Ty Washington, who's a freshman at the point, a couple different shooting guards, a couple older guys, just a very interesting slash different mixture of guys that Calipari's used to having, definitely an older team. So he can just start his coaching. Maybe some things he would start in October to teach a traditionally all freshman team, mm-hmm. teaching early kind of expedites that process, because usually we don't see the Kentucky teams really kind of getting their, you know what, together until mid-January. We see those first mm-hmm. couple games, we're like, what are they doing? They're messy, they're sloppy, they're making stupid mistakes. You can already tell that these guys know how to play basketball. They have the experience, they have the basketball IQ. You don't have to teach a lot of those just smaller nuisance things with a traditionally dominant freshman sophomore team. Mm-hmm. Next, I want to go to, let's see. Also, I do want to highlight, I pulled up the top 25. This is not just the SEC, but we're going to count how many SEC teams. So first, we have got Alabama at 9, Kentucky at 10, Arkansas 12, Tennessee 13, Auburn 18, Florida 20, and LSU 25. What was that, 6, 7?
7.
7 teams in the top 25.
That's football-esque. That's what the SEC does in football, is put that many teams in the top 25. And what's funny is, too, you mentioned Auburn, and I wanted to kick myself for not even mentioning Auburn in the opening question, too, because they have a load of talent as well, and Bruce Pearl's still there. And as long as Bruce Pearl's still there, they're going to be a nightmare for a lot of teams.
Well, and you hit the nail on the head right there when you said, we're not talking football. We're not talking SEC football. We're talking SEC basketball. And I think mm-hmm. that has been a big storyline within the last, okay, COVID gets me all confused with years and stuff. So what was that? The whole COVID situation was like 2 years. So let's go back to like, say 2014, you know, conference play has always been hard, but traditionally you've seen Kentucky mm-hmm. easily win the SEC tournament pretty much every year. And then I'm trying to think, that would have been 2017 when was the Admiral Schofield year?
That would have been about 2018. Those 2 years where they really made a run, or the year they went number one would have been, yeah. it'd been January of 2019. So the 18-19 season would have been the year that Tennessee like had a few weeks at number one.
Yeah. So that team, the LSU team was really good that year. And then Auburn, that I think that was the same year that they went to the Final Four.
It was. Mm-hmm.
You're seeing these SEC programs just recruit and build their programs. Look at what Bruce Pearl did at Auburn. They made a Final Four run. Incredible team. You're really seeing the SEC show out in tournament time. I was reading, I think it was an Andy Katz article on NCC. That was the name of the news station at Syracuse for our student news. The NCAA.com about he could see all seven of those teams we just named in the top 25 making a tournament run. That's incredible.
Oh,
you know, it's really the ACC, which is SEC football, ACC basketball. I would argue that SEC is better in basketball this year.
You could. Oh, they're certainly deeper. I mean, you look at some of the teams later in this conference, like towards the bottom. I mean, Georgia's, I think, the clear-cut worst team in the conference, and they beat a very talented Memphis team just last week. Ole Miss is going to be, in terms of competitiveness, maybe not as competitive as last year. They still have a good team. I mean, Mississippi State, a team that no one's going to think about in terms of being in the top six in this conference, but they got Garrison Brooks from North Carolina. They got Rocket Watts from Michigan State. They have an NC State transfer who is starting. Iverson Molinar is going to be an all-SEC player. He's already a preseason all-SEC player for them. Like, that is a really well-coached and talented bunch that once they get, you know, things going, are going to be a lot better than what they are right now. And they already have a couple of decent wins on their resume early. And that's a team that can make the NCAA tournament. I mean, the conference can get like 8 or 9 in this year, which is just almost unfathomable to me, given the number of teams that are in the conference.
Also, I didn't watch this game. I'm going to be completely transparent, but I know you did.
Yes.
Or you probably did. Alabama over Gonzaga.
One of the more impressive games. I mean,
Gonzaga, what? They were number one for, I mean, pretty much coming off last season.
And all of last year, because they didn't lose.
Yeah. Didn't lose. And then coming into this year, not losing too many players, looking very solid.
Yeah.
Lost to Duke. Again, Duke's got a great team this year. Mm-hmm. What did you see in the win from Alabama over Gonzaga?
It's when they play to what they want to do, and that's shoot a lot of threes, get a lot of possessions, and make you uncomfortable defensively. In the first half, you saw that make a lot of threes thing. And Jaden Shackelford hit 6 by himself in the first half. The team hit 10. I mean, they were like 10 for 18 or something from three-point range in the first half. And that's, I mean, one of the ways you beat anybody is just by shooting the ball incredibly well. Now, they're not going to be shooting 10, making 10 threes every half. Yeah, it helps. And you're not going to be making 10 threes every half you play. So in the second half, obviously that number dipped a little bit, but Alabama was still able to pull away because they're still that good defensively. Now, they don't have Herb Jones, who SEC Defensive Player of the Year and MVP of the entire conference last year. Don't have him this year, which takes away from some of your defensive versatility, but they still will harass you defensively, and almost all Nate Oates coach teams do. They're very analytically driven. They love to take clear threes. They love to get shots at the rim, and they love to get to the free throw line. Last year, they were the tops in a lot of those categories, and this year, you're seeing a lot of the same thing. Offensively, they're better so far after, 8 games, sitting at 10 in offensive efficiency, only 22 in defensive efficiency, which is still really good. I mean, you're still holding teams to less than a point per possession, but they're doing a lot of things that is on brand for them, and there's still a little bit enough roster turnover to where it might take a little bit of time to be able to get that adjusted. The loss against Iona is an adjustment loss. I mean, you're still playing guys, you know, like Javon Quinterly, Jaden Shackelford, Jawan Gary, those guys, and Keon Ellis, those are guys who have been playing for Nate Oates for a couple of years now. They understand the system, but you're also getting a lot of usage from J.D. Davison, a freshman. He's only played 8 games, and he is a high-usage kind of player, and as he should be, because he is that insanely talented. He gets about 22% of the shots whenever he's playing. Noah Gurley, the Furman transfer, came from being the big fish in a small pond to having to fit in with guys that are just more talented than him and having to learn a different offense that he might not be as accustomed to. But when they play the game they want to play, which is obviously very mm-hmm. analytically driven and is a good format to beat anybody, they're dangerous. I mean, that is one of the most impressive. Like, to me, I think they might have to be the favorite as of right now. If you held a gun to my head and say, pick one favorite, I like this Alabama team because of, and you saw what they did to Gonzaga too. While they gave up 82 points, it was a high possession game, but they were able to get stops late in the game and make life on Drew Timmy a whole lot harder than he gets in a lot of other games that he plays. So you saw the variety of which Alabama can play in terms of killing you from the three-point line and locking you up defensively and forcing turnovers to kind of seal a lot of these wins.
Let's just be real, too. I mean, Drew Timmy playing an Alabama team like that, he doesn't see a lot of that in conference play, mm-mm. which is a it's a double-edged sword for Gonzaga, right? Mm-hmm. They were undefeated last year. You get number one seed. You get, like, it benefits them, builds confidence. But don't get me wrong. Gonzaga was a phenomenal team last year. We obviously saw them go all the way to the national championship. But when you're playing a tougher regular season schedule, mm-hmm. it's going to help your team.
Oh, it'll benefit them in the long run.
And for Alabama to go in there and just get that win under their belt when they are going to have a very tough conference schedule, that's going to benefit that Alabama team. Mm-hmm. Because they can say, hey, we have this non-conference top five team win under our belt moving forward, especially if they're not as consistent in conference play. I want to switch over to Tennessee really quick. We're kind of just jumping all over.
With the contenders
mm-hmm. right now. Tennessee, obviously, Rick Barnes always has a very solid program over in Knoxville. Kennedy Chandler, a lot of hype around him. They played the other night in Madison Square Garden in the V Week. The Jimmy V Classic. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Like it was V Week, and that was the Jimmy V Classic of games. Correct.
Exactly. Which, an amazing event that ESPN puts on, raises money for cancer. Probably one of my favorite mm-hmm. just weeks of videos and raising money for cancer. Whenever they play Jim Valvano's speech, I will sit in front of my TV, watch it, and just cry every single time. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know what I'm talking about,
it is a life changer.
Mm-hmm. You need to go watch it. Even if you're not a basketball fan in life, it's just, it's incredible. But Tennessee played Texas Tech, and I happened to be cooking dinner or something, and I was scrolling through Twitter, and I had forgot it was on, honestly. That's the one thing about college basketball, at least for college football, mm-hmm. at least, you know, every Saturday we can just flip channels. College basketball, I swear, it's Monday, it's Tuesday, it's Wednesday, it's Thursday, it's Friday, Saturday. I just,
it's every day at this point. Once it tips off, it don't stop until April.
I know. And I was like, oh yes, I forgot this game's on tonight. I probably could have gone without watching it. That was tough. That was really, really tough for that Tennessee team. Yeah. I mean, and Texas Tech. It was really just not a offensively Lovely. Pretty game, offensively good game.
That's a nice way of saying it.
Okay game. Yeah. It was an bad, bad game. There's my analysis for it.
Oh, which is more than anyone should give on that game, but as we do on this program, I got the nitty-gritty numbers on that we'll break down during Give and Go, and then I'll ask a question that I honestly am thinking about signing a petition for to be made later in the season, and you'll see that later on. But that game, ugly. And what surprises me, though, like, that's the game Tennessee likes to play. You know what I mean? Tennessee likes to play in those lower-scoring games. At least all of Rick Barnes' Tennessee teams have been really good at winning those games. When you only shoot about 30% effective field goal shooting, you're not going to beat anybody. I don't care what style you're playing. I don't care who you're playing. It's a miracle that Texas Tech won that game shooting like 36% effective field goal shooting. That's how ugly of a game it was. Absolutely atrocious on both ends. But even like that's – Tennessee has those every now and then. I feel like that's more of an anomaly where offensively this team is going to be better than it has been, especially last year. Last year they did – like. They didn't have a true point guard to run the offense and facilitate, get the ball to scores in advantageous situations. And a lot of players like Santiago Vescovi and Keon Johnson were put in those roles, and that's not what they're good for. You know, that's not what benefits them best. Like, Vescovi is a good spot-up shooter. He's at his best when he can shoot seven threes a game off of a catch. And a point guard like Kennedy Chandler is going to be able to do that for them. And he's done it so far this year. Tennessee hoisted up 40 threes in that game. And if you only hit six, you're not going to beat many teams. But the quality of those threes weren't bad quality threes. And I think Tennessee can live with that. But the one thing about this Tennessee team that's like every other's that's a good thing is they are elite defensively. As of right now, in terms of KenPom's adjusted defensive efficiency rating, Tennessee is your number one defense in all of college basketball right now.
Which saved them from getting blown out big time.
Exactly. And like you, like having a defense the way that Tennessee's is gives you so much more margin for error, especially if you're offensively inept. Like that's how they won their games last year. They're offensively inept all season long. And just you can't rely on playing that style of play because you'll run into a team like Auburn who shoots the three really well, or Alabama who shoots the three really well, and they will wreck you because you can play great defense all day, but if a team's hitting tough shots and they're getting high-quality looks, they're going to be able to keep that coming throughout the entire 40 minutes of a basketball game. And while you're a great defensive team can hold a great offensive team to 65 points and that be considered a good game, if you're not scoring more than 55, you're losing by double digits. And that's what Tennessee saw a lot last year. The big thing with Tennessee this year is they at least have a point guard who can facilitate an offense to get you to where you can still win games in the upper 60s, early 70s, or even some games in the 80s because Chandler can get you 25 points. He can dish out 7 or 8 assists. And he can create three-pointers for other players. And then good looks for John Fulkerson down low, who likes to score from about 10 to 15 feet away. So I think that gives him enough versatility this year to where you can consider Tennessee a legitimate contender in the SEC despite the splatter show we saw at MSG on Tuesday.
Elijah, I agree with everything you said. I think one point you hit on was the shot selection wasn't the problem.
Sound
so, okay, it was an off-night shooting for them, right? Traditionally, I mean, fingers crossed, those shots, they'll make those shots, right? It's still early in the season. That wasn't the problem. They weren't taking crazy shots. They were making plays. Kennedy Chandler, like you said, was facilitating, creating opportunities for other players on the team using his weapons he has. But the fact that they didn't let their defense be affected by not making shots is what you see a lot from teams. When they are not making shots, when they are struggling offensively, it carries over into the defense, which then it's just a dumpster fire. The fact that this Tennessee team was able to hold it together defensively is going to save them when they do have games like that, because you will have games like that. Everybody has games like that where you can't
all
shoot
all the time.
But if you have good shot selection and you just keep shooting, what do you say? They were 6 for 40 something. Okay. That's
not pretty,
but as long as you don't let it affect your defense, because once you let it affect your defense, when you're shooting like that, it's going to be bad, bad, bad for you.
And we've talked about Memphis a lot on this program, and that's that Memphis kind of let that particular thing happen in the Iowa State loss earlier this year where, they're playing fantastic defensively. Iowa State's hitting tough shots. But you can't get too frustrated on the offensive side of the ball and then neglect what you were doing well. And a lot of that can stem from coaching and a lot of player maturity as well. And
Tennessee, I was going to say young players.
Young players. And Tennessee has some young talent, but they have a lot of veteran older players who have been there, played for Barnes for a while, that aren't going to get too rattled as well. So we've hit on Tennessee, hit on Kentucky, Alabama, and which I think at the beginning of the year, you would have said those were the three teams coming into the season that you'd have expected to be here.
Yep.
The team that I have become fascinated with and am slightly falling in basketball crush for because the metrics have, and they do play a brand of basketball that's unique, is LSU. LSU is 8-0. They're number two
Go
in net
Tigers.
Ranking.
Go Tigers.
Go
Tigers.
Yeah, and Ed
Orgeron. Or as Brian Kelly would say, me and my family.
Family. Like he stretched that out to three syllables and it like or three or four syllables when it shouldn't have been three or four syllables, you know. Like I mean, even Brian Kelly's botched Southern accent at halftime of the game there doesn't keep them from playing well because this LSU team can lock up. They're sixth ranked nationally in defensive adjusted efficiency on KenPom. This is a team that has played good offensive teams. According to the net rankings, they have, out of the top 10 teams in net, they have the highest average win ranking. So out of all the teams they've won, or teams they've beaten in those eight games, the average net ranking of those wins is higher than anyone in the top 10. So they're playing a lot of consistently good teams, and they're holding teams like Belmont, who are a top 30 defensive team, who's a top 30 defensive team in the country, to 53 points. This is a team that, and I talked to Casey Alexander earlier today, and he says it's frustrating playing them defensively because they're deep, they are uber athletic, and they switch everything, which when you play offenses like Belmont's, that's predicated on making good passes, good cuts, setting good screens. A team that will switch everything will throw you for a loop, and you got to be able to adjust to that. And it's hard for teams too. It's not that like anybody can adjust to that. That is a brand of basketball that is really, really tough to overcome. LSU plays a frustrating brand of basketball, and they've played some good competition, and they're winning by large margins. Liberty's a good mid-major team. They beat them by almost 20 points. They beat Belmont by 30. The only slip-up, like, they took Penn State, or Penn State took them to overtime on a neutral floor. Not the worst thing. Wake Forest has improved. They beat Wake Forest by 14, and then Ohio, who is flirting with the top 100 in KenPom, they beat by 14 as well. So they're winning a lot of games, and they're doing it in a manner that appears to be matching what they are and even more than what I expected.
I think, Elijah, too, what you hit on, something I'm really fascinated by LSU is the fact that they change it up, like you said. Mm-hmm. And when you get, say, a young SEC team in conference play coming in here, it flusters them on the court. It flusters them when they have to talk to each other and be their own coaches on the court, and they don't have their coach or their coach in on the court with them. They need to figure it out. They need to put everything together that their coach has told them in practice and be able to think on the fly, adjust on the fly. So when veteran teams see that, it might not be as a surprise for them. I mean, it'll still be a surprise, but they'll feel more comfortable being able to switch up their play or just more confident in their basketball decisions. And that comes with experience, that comes with basketball IQ, veteran players. And I think that's going to be LSU's, their like triple threat this year is doing that. I'm really excited to see what that team can do. And I'm really excited to see Brian Kelly speak more at halftime.
Exactly. And see how bad it disturbs everybody there that's in attendance too. And last thing on LSU, Darius Days, that's your dark horse for player of the year in the SEC.
Dark horse. That's the word I was looking for. Not triple threat when I was talking about that dark horse. So thank you.
Definitely an elite dark horse candidate here as well. That's for player of the year. We didn't really hit on Arkansas. Didn't really hit on Florida, but I'll go give you a chance, Michelle. Who is a team that we haven't talked about so far that you would not be surprised if they came into the SEC tournament as the overall one seed?
Let's see where I just had them pulled up on here. I had a stat for, okay. Give me 1 second. I'm trying to look. I pulled it up right here. It was like a stat on Arkansas.
Ooh, I do like Arkansas a lot. I'm a big Eric Musselman fan.
Yeah. And then Devontae Davis, he has just looked really fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, crafty left-handed. I think he could emerge as one of SEC's best two-way guards this season. I think he's got a lot of versatility. I think they have a couple other weapons on the team. Jalen Williams, who was the Pittsburgh transfer, and I'm going to butcher his name. IUD's Tony.
Yeah, Adi's Tony. Yeah, I think Adi's Tony. Yeah, that one's a tough one, but he a key transfer that Musselman landed.
Yeah, I think the only downfall for Arkansas this year is that they're not going to play the toughest non-conference schedule. So if they can win a couple of those, did they play Illinois yet?
They did not to play Illinois because Cincinnati beat Illinois, and then they beat Cincinnati. Okay. Cincinnati, who's been hot and cold.
They're always a team, though, that can make a run in the tournament. Mm-hmm. They're that, like, Power Six conference. Cincinnati always has a good team. I never count them out. Them and Xavier, those two teams are always good. But like I said, Arkansas, I do think they're a really good team. I think they have a lot of weapons. Like we just talked about, But I think they're going to have to perform and have a pretty good record in the SEC because their non-conference schedule isn't as strong as some of the other teams. Like you said, you've got Alabama, Kentucky playing teams like Gonzaga, Duke. Kentucky goes out to play Ohio State soon, who just beat Duke. So when you're playing against teams like that, and then you have a similar record in the conference, you're just going to have to be aware of that, because that could be something that could end up hurting the team that they don't really have full control over.
Yeah. Oh, that's definitely true.
But it stinks.
It yeah, which can, but in a way I kind of like how Musselman made the schedule to, thinking back, you know, to Arkansas and the scheduling, that there's a lot of roster shakeup. You know, and that's something that you get with Kentucky. Kentucky had a lot of roster shakeup, or as they do every year, and that's something they have to deal with, is scheduling to, like, where are games where you can get the largest margin for error, right?
Yeah.
And I think at least they did a good job of making it to where it's not too difficult, to where those games where you're not going to be your best early in the season, it's not going to break your spirit either, especially on a team that just hasn't had to be, like, had the time to gel the same way a lot of other teams have, especially in this conference for sure. So I like Arkansas as a
sleeper. And just a note on teams gelling. We have seen so much movement in the transfer portal just coming off that COVID year, or the second half of the COVID year, into this season. I think you told me a stat like way early about the most ever transfers or the transfer portal or something crazy like that. Yeah. Record breaking for the transfer portal. So many student athletes moving around from conference to team within the same conference, all over the place. So a lot of teams are going to be facing that adversity this year, just with figuring out how you get these kids up to speed on your offensive game plan, your defensive game plan. How do you fit them in your system? Which is going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. Basketball is always fun. It's always exciting. There's always a million games to watch. We touched on a little bit the Jimmy V Classic, which we're going to highlight a little bit more of those games. But those were some pretty good ones these last couple days.
Absolutely. So the SEC conclusion, a ton of fun. And it's going to start here in a couple weeks. Still a little bit of time until conference play starts. But we're already starting to see what a lot of these teams have in store. I'm excited to break it down even further as the season goes along. But we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We will discuss V-Week, the games that we saw on Tuesday night. We'll have Give and Go. And then we'll also talk about our first live coverage of games that we get to do as a show for a pretty big in-state matchup. We'll get into all that on the other side as you're listening to Courtside with Cam Lukanezovic here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Segment number two on Courtside with Campbell and Knezovic. I'm Elijah Campbell alongside Michelle Knezovic. And as we discussed the SEC, there is an SEC team that participated in the Jimmy V Classic in the middle of V Week on ESPN, celebrating the life and the contribution of cancer from Dick Vitale to Jim Valvano and everything in between. A fantastic event that ESPN puts on every year. And so we had Texas Tech and Tennessee, an offensive bleep show of biblical proportion. But then there was actually another good game after that that was a little more aesthetically pleasing, and that was Villanova and Syracuse. So Michelle, I'll go ahead and turn it over to you. What were your initial takeaways from the Tech-Tennessee game that we slightly touched on earlier, and Villanova and Syracuse?
Initial takeaways from Texas Tech and Tennessee. I think we kind of touched on them a little bit earlier in the first segment, but we'll reiterate them. Tennessee had Kennedy Chandler did a great job of making opportunities for his teammates, but the ball just wasn't sinking. It wasn't making it in. I think you said the stat line was something around 40 attempted field goals, or six of the 40 attempted or something like that.
Right? I think it was 6 for 40 from three. Atrocious.
From three. But didn't let it affect the defensive play. So unfortunately, not very aesthetically pleasing. Texas Tech, Tennessee just did a really good job of guarding them and not allowing them to get points on the board. I don't think Texas Tech had an overly awful offensive performance. I think it was more, it said more about Tennessee's defense on Texas Tech. Switching over to the later game, we had Villanova, which is, I think they're top, are they top 10 still? I think they're top 10 still.
I think they're number six going into the game on Tuesday night.
Played Syracuse. Syracuse isn't ranked in the top 25, but Jim Boeheim always brings a solid team to the table, especially when we get into tournament time. This year, he's got both of his sons on the team, Buddy Boeheim and Jimmy Boeheim, who Buddy Boeheim led the ACC in scoring last year. And they've also got a point guard at JG3, everyone calls him, Joe Girard III, who had a really solid freshman year. Last year, wasn't the best. And then this year has been playing a lot better. He had some deep threes really early in the game. But what I saw against with those two teams, great shooting. They came out, I think Syracuse hit like three threes, like back to back to back, like off three possessions or something like that. But that, I mean, that's what you're going to see from Jim Boeheim's team. They don't have an overly, they have Jesse Edwards, who's a big guy. I think he's almost 7 foot, but he's not like, he's lanky. He's not like really filled out or like Oscar Tshiebwe, where he's got a lot of muscle and he's a not only tall, but he's a big guy.
Got a thinner frame. And
can be really physical in the paint. Jesse Edwards can be, but he's kind of skinny. He's kind of lanky, which doesn't help when you go against some bigger teams like what's his name on Villanova?
Oh, yeah. Villanova, I mean, they don't have, they have a ton of talent, not a ton of size is what I'm looking for when I cross those over. But not a ton of size, but they have got like five great offensive rebounders too that are on the floor at all times. Like Villanova grabbed 27 offensive rebounds.
Who are physical, who are very physical.
Very physical.
Jesse is tall and he has a couple inches on them, but not as physical as these guys who kind of got bumped around a little bit. But Villanova ended up pulling away in the end, but I was honestly surprised at how well Syracuse was shooting it, especially in Madison Square Garden, where we saw such a off offensive performance in the first game. So you always wonder like, oh, like sometimes people say going in venues like that, it's just so different, or the depth. Or
depth perception can throw you, especially in the Final Four when you're playing at like these football arenas, you know?
Yeah. So wasn't really sure what we were going to see, but Villanova ended up pulling away in the end. I do think Villanova overall is the better team, more skilled team, but I think Syracuse looked like a very well put together team and played very well as a team.
There's a lot of pluses there. I mean, Jimmy Boeheim looked really good. That's probably the best game of Jimmy Boeheim's life. I mean, he was getting to the rim, like not at will, but I mean, he was able to create easy looks for himself. He made, I think he hit one of his 2 3-pointer attempts. Yeah. And if you were able to get 3 of 5 from three from JG3 every night, then you're gonna have some solid production there. I'm kind of like you, though. You need more from guys like Cole Swider, who is a Villanova transfer, who came to Syracuse to play a bigger role. You need him to fulfill that role. And you need guys to help Buddy Boeheim out. Buddy Boeheim didn't have a great shooting night. I think he missed all 5 of his 3-point attempts. He was about 3 for 10, which is rare. He's a really good 3-point shooter. It's very rare that he has nights like that. And when he does, you can't let that alone be detrimental to you losing a game. Like Jesse Edwards, he's a 6'11". I mean, the guy, he's got a ton of size. He shot all 15 of Syracuse's free throws, which is a wild stat in that game. The only Syracuse Orangeman, well, they're the Orange now. I think they dropped the men part, but the only Syracuse Orange
that was a big ordeal.
It was, exactly. And I still want to call him the Orangeman because I think of Otto the Orange, and I just think Orangeman. Yeah. That was ingrained in me as a young child. But Jesse Edwards shot all the free throws for that team. And I think that might have been by design, too, for Villanova. They were going to be able to try – they want to take away other driving lanes and make guys like Jesse Edwards beat them. That's a blueprint that Syracuse is going to be seeing.
You don't want to put Buddy on the line. You don't want to put JG3 on the line. JG3, I think, was 99% – from the foul line at one point for freshman year or something. You don't want to foul. Like, that's just easy points for them.
Yeah. And easy points.
And it should be for most teams, but unfortunately we don't see that for most teams.
And what's funny too is, so Syracuse runs that patented 2-3 zone that they have they play for 35 years. And the whole point of it is designed to make your 2-pointers hard and encourage you to shoot a ton of threes. Well, Villanova said bet and shot 50 threes, only hit 13. They shot 26% from three. However, the one thing that Villanova counteracts with really well compared to other Villanova teams is they offensive rebound so, so well. And like I mentioned earlier, they had 27 offensive rebounds. And if you can't, throughout the flow of your offense, create shots near the rim, one of the best ways to do that is by grabbing misses, depending on like how bad the miss is. If it's a back heel miss, you can still get the rebound about 12 feet away. The zone defense itself is scrambling because the hardest thing to do in a zone defense is find someone to block out and rebound. And that's exactly what kind of happened in that game, too. Villanova took advantage of that by grabbing a bunch of offensive boards and getting a ton of second chance points. And that really hurt Syracuse in the end. So, but see, I'm kind of like you. Like, there's a little intrigue with Syracuse. I still think they finished like in the middle of the ACC, but
I agree.
Like a lot of Syracuse teams do, they do that often. Like, a lot of Jim Boeheim's best March runs have come from teams that finish in the middle of the conference. So,
well, and it's a 3-point shooting team, and
yeah,
you're never going to be. Nobody's ever going to be basically 100% every game, or even shooting 60% every game. It's just, it's inconsistent because of how many 3-pointers they shoot, and that's the name of their game. So they're not going to be on every night. And but we'll say them playing in the Carrier Dome helps when they go to big arenas like this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it certainly does. Another fun fact.
And it also helps that Jim Boeheim has a court in his house, so Jimmy and Buddy have been playing there forever.
For their entire lives, basically. Yeah. They've also been in that program, like their dad, for most of their lives.
There was an awesome video that, if you're a basketball fan, you've probably seen it on Twitter before, but it's a video of Carmelo Anthony when he was at Syracuse. And it's so funny because it just like totally is that era. He's wearing like the huge baggy shirt, like the shorts that are all the way down to the ankles. And you just see like little Buddy and Jimmy like running around him and stuff. Must be pretty special too for Jim Boeheim. You know, he's getting up there. Everybody's like, oh, is he going to retire after this year? After he coaches both of his sons, you know, it's Buddy's senior year. Jimmy's taking that extra grad year. Definitely probably pretty special for him this year to be able to coach both of his sons and in potentially his last year. I mean, who knows? He's already like 77, 78.
He's been doing this thing at Syracuse for a long time. Yeah. He's been doing it for a long time. And before we get to give and go, one last thing from this game, and it's probably one of the weirdest stats we'll hear from a game all year long. Only three players shot free throws. I mentioned Jesse Edwards being the only Syracuse player to shoot a free throw. Well, Villanova as a team only shot 6 free throws. 4 came from Demir Crosby-Roundtree, and then the other 2 came from Jermaine Samuels. So only 3 players shot free throws in that entire game. You're not going to see many like that as the season goes on. So we'll go ahead and start give and go.
Also,
last week.
77, sorry, really quick.
77?
Yeah.
I would have guessed like 73, 74. I mean, looks good for 77, but not a lot of people coach in their late 70s or early 80s. So, I mean, I do have a feeling that maybe once the Boeheim brothers leave the program, that it would make sense to see Coach Jim Boeheim.
You'll catch me on my golf cart, hopefully in Florida somewhere at 77.
I'm hoping you do that to me when I'm 57. I mean, if I have a chance to do it 20 years before I get to 77, I'll take that touché. As well.
Touché.
So we'll go ahead and move on. Last week, you gave me the questions for give and go. It is now my turn to return the favor, like one does in a give and go play. And we'll go ahead and start off with number one. Purdue is now the third number one team in the AP poll. Gonzaga held the one spot basically for the entire season last year, and they lost to Duke. Duke took it. Duke fell to Ohio State. Purdue took it. So the question here is there more parity at the top of college basketball this season than there's been in the last few seasons?
That's a hard one. I'm going to say, no, I'm going to go away with, or I'm going to give that one away.
Okay. Giving it away.
Because
I like it.
I think, and first off, COVID year has a lot to do with this because we didn't see non-conference play, which when we see non-conference play, we have so many more upsets and crazy games because we're seeing these number one and two play each other, number three and five, all these top 25 teams play each other, or all of these just random non-conference teams play each other that they don't really know how the other team plays, can't scout them as well as the in-conference teams. So no, and I think we're going to see it switch up a lot more. And I think we're going to see Kentucky at the top of that when we beat Ohio State coming up.
That's a big one coming up. There's a lot of big games coming up Saturday that I'm really excited for. But yeah, there's my favorite thing about college basketball specifically is the parity in the sport. I don't think there's maybe more this year, but I think this year we're going to see a lot of teams that can win the title as opposed to maybe the last couple of years. So number two, we'll go back to the dreaded disaster at Madison Square Garden, where Texas Tech and Tennessee had obviously, to me, might be the worst two-sided shooting game in college hoops history. There's only 109 total points, and that was after an overtime period. Both teams shot a combined 10 of 64 from three, which is 15%. And combined, the team shot 28.7% from the entire field, highlighted by Josiah Jordan James's slip on a layup, which might be one of the most like hilariously blown open layup attempts in college basketball history. And side note, the funniest part of that play was I didn't get to watch that play. I was driving back from Portland after doing a play-by-play for Portland High School's doubleheader on Tuesday. So I was listening to it on the radio when Bob Kessling, the broadcaster for the Vols, calls that James gets the ball in transition. He goes, oh, well, finally, here's an easy one for Tennessee. This should get him out of the slump. And as soon as those words leave his mouth, he then has to follow it up with, and James slips underneath the basket and misses the layup. And like it was one of the funniest sequences of play-by-play radio basketball that you will ever hear.
We need that as SportsCenter top 10.
Oh, my God. And that has to be number one on not top 10 on SportsCenter. So effective field goal shooting of 34 is what Texas Tech had. And Texas Tech managed to win the game. So given what I just told you, should both of these teams be banned from Madison Square Garden for at least a year for putting America what they went through?
Let's go with that one. Ban them. Texas, Tennessee, get out of here. Woo. Get out of here.
Oh, atrocious. An absolute train wreck. And we talked about
it. I think he'd rotate the teams in. I mean, they always do in the Jimmy V Classic, but get them out of here. They're not in there for another, say, 10 years.
Yeah, there needs to be a grace period to where just no one that was involved in that game, player or coach, should be allowed back for a while. That one was pretty sore. For the eyes there. And lastly, the Big Ten. They won the ACC Big Ten Challenge and did so, not necessarily maybe in dominating fashion, but the best teams in the conference beat some of the best teams in the ACC. We talked about the SEC being deep and loaded, so I'll go ahead and bring this into the equation as well. With the Big Ten looking the way they are, if you had to pick a conference in college basketball to pick a champion from, is it coming out of the Big Ten? So I guess maybe another way to phrase this would be, if you had to pick one conference to where you get every single team and you only win the bet if one of those teams wins, do you take the Big Ten?
Honestly, I know this was a very SEC-focused show today.
We dove into it.
In SEC country, we dove deep into all these teams. Traditionally, the ACC is the huge basketball conference, but I kind of want to say the Big Ten's got some sneaky links, Elijah.
They do.
Ohio State looked good.
Yeah.
Ohio State looked really good.
And beating Duke.
I'm going to go with that one.
Okay. Wow. Going to go with it. And like that's funny because I was kind of thinking the same way too. Like obviously the SEC has stupid depth, but there's about three teams, and I know Illinois has been a little disappointing this year. And they're not anywhere near as good as they should be, but they could still win it all.
Kentucky took all their coaches, so.
Kentucky poached Brad Underwood's staff, and now they're kind of stuck with a skeleton staff. But, I mean, Illinois is still a team that's got one of the best post players in the country in Kofi Coburn.
They'll be solid, you know.
Yeah, Purdue's the best team in college basketball right now. Michigan, when they get out of their funk, is still one of the most talented rosters in college basketball. I know they haven't played very well recently, and they're still kind of getting themselves out of whatever the hell it is early in the season that's going on with them. But I like Michigan State this year as a good team. Ohio State has a very
– Izzo always figures it out.
Izzo teams figure it out. And then, of course, like one of the teams that's projected – that's already 0-2 in the conference, Iowa, is the number 5 offensive efficient team in college basketball. Like, that's an insane offense that just shoots the lights out of the ball and has a couple of the best scores in the conference as well. Iowa could be sneaky good this year, so I'm kind of like you. I like the Big Ten a lot.
Look at all these Big Ten sneaky links. That's going to be my new look for
it. So before we head on out here, Michelle, we'll go ahead and give the people what they want, and that's the news that we are going to be at Bridgestone Arena on December 18th, Tennessee, Memphis, the best basketball rivalry in the state. We'll have some live coverage from there, as well as a lot in terms of breaking down the game, getting people on to talk about this game. Super excited about that. Very much so looking forward to being able to cover our first game as a show collectively.
Look at us. We are moving up in the ranks. So excited, especially with each week, a step closer to conference play, a step closer to deeper in the season. College football's rounding out. We're really transitioning after the holidays. We're going to be full speed ahead into conference play. And before we know it, March is going to be here. And we're going to be talking about how Kentucky won the national championship.
Some very wishful thinking here from Michelle Knezvik, but it could also be very true. Kentucky's an interesting team. So next week, we'll break in. We'll get into more of that as well with Tennessee, Memphis, Kentucky, Louisville will be in the coming weeks as well. Vanderbilt has a big game tomorrow night against Loyola Chicago that I'm pumped to be in the house for. So a lot to get to next week as well. Thank you for listening once again, as always, to the best college basketball podcast, Nashville, Tennessee. You've been listening to Courtside with Kamel Knezevic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.